When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat. And boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who with it now?
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome into the bullpen. Ryan McDonald, Cam Smith, John Belmer here with you on a glorious Saturday afternoon in the fair city of Houston, Texas. Gentlemen, how you doing today?
Great. It is a fair day, is it not?
I wasn't sure how, because anyone who's listened to the show now for a while, like, I'm not trying to start us off on a bummer here, but I wasn't sure now that you've had, what, 5 days to recoup from...
Oh, God.
I wasn't sure, I don't know what stage of grief or trauma, like, where are you at in the processing part of what happened on Monday night?
I've moved on.
You've moved on?
Mostly because we've seen the last 4 or 5 years this great U of H team have their opportunities to take home a championship. So I feel like, even though this was probably their, obviously, it was their best chance to win.
Best chance since 84. I mean, at least that was the last time they were in a title game.
Yeah. Once you've kind of have little heartaches the years before, it's a little easier to deal with. I feel like
so you're just numb to pain now.
Yeah.
Is
but
that,
honestly,
is that what you're saying?
I felt obviously the players are going to feel worse than the fans because the players are in the game. But I think it took me longer to not feel bad for those starters than I did for my actual self.
Right, yeah. I mean, especially for... And at least this guy will have a chance to, in theory, I assume he's coming back. He's not, you know, done like Juwan Roberts. Especially for Emmanuel Sharpe, because not only for the last possession where obviously he goes up for the shot, has to let the ball go because it looks like the Florida player was going to just stuff him into oblivion, and then obviously they in the possession without even getting a shot off. But the play before that, you know, he had the ball, he dribbled to, tried to drive to the paint, and I believe it might have been Walker also on that play. I don't remember the Florida player on that play for sure, but knocked the ball right off of Sharp's knee, goes out of bounds, and they turned the ball over. So two possessions in a row, Sharp had, he was the last Cougar to touch the ball, and it ended in two turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, just unorthodox U of H play. What was it? I think their final four possessions ended in turnovers,
and they only had one turnover the entire first half. Like, Florida was, like, end of the first half, I believe it was 9-1 as far as turnovers for Florida to Houston.
Yeah,
like, it was like Houston was dominating them on turnovers, and like you said, it was just all of a sudden they hit, you know, just a switch just flipped, and all of a sudden the team was turning the ball over, making uncharacteristic mistakes. It was a tough way to go out, because it looked... Now, I will say, as a non, like, I was rooting for him in the game because I'm a Houstonian.
Yeah.
I want Houston to win. But as a non, like, normal, you know, Cougar rooting, someone without Cougar rooting interest on a normal day-to-day basis, I will say it was not that it wasn't karma, but it was tough for me to feel too bad, because kind of the same thing that happened to them against Florida, they did to Duke. So kind of, yeah. like as bad as you want to feel about the Florida loss, it's like, well, you probably shouldn't even been there to begin with, because the same thing happened to Duke. So I, at least that was part of my, like, processing it and grieving as an outside observer who was rooting for Houston in the game but didn't go there. But I imagine that might probably not is not much of a condolence to those who went there and bleed Scarlet.
No, I mean, but it... I mean, you're right. I mean, Florida did exactly to them what they did to Duke. But I feel like this is just kind of like a common theme with U of H in those elimination games. They will play 37 minutes of great basketball. But
they were the better team easily for, what, 33, 35 minutes in that game? And it just flipped.
Yeah, but there's always a couple-minute streaks where something just goes wrong with this team, whether it's a few years ago with free throws or a streak of taking injuries. A bunch of threes and then injuries. And then obviously against Florida.
Shed in particular a couple years ago.
But, you know, at the end of the day, like, it sucks. But you also have to be positive because, if I'm not mistaken, they just signed three top
I believe they have, like, 2 5-stars and a 4-star. They have a crazy class coming in, so.
And the transfer they got from Creighton.
Creighton was like a 17-point-per-game score. So yeah. Duke can play. So, yeah, certainly no short of talent there for Kelvin Sampson, the Cougs. So should have a great shot of it next year. You hate to see one slip away because maybe they win one next year, but it could have been two. And so that's always – look, I mean, we're used to it in this city, and if you want to weigh in, like, what are your most heartbreaking moments rooting for Houston sports? I mean, whether it be the Oilers and the Bills back in 93, whether it be Damian Lillard hitting the walk-off shot against the Rockets, the Texans collapse against the Chiefs in 2019 where they're up 24-0. If you have a definitive worst moment in Houston sports, give us a call or text on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We'll work those in as the show goes on. But again, Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, John Belmer with you here on this Saturday. And let's talk about the Texans news because things have been quiet over on Kirby. Feels like for a couple weeks since the heat of free agency died down, but they made some news with another extension, one of many they've had this offseason, extending safety Jalen Petrie, which when I first saw the news before I saw the details, I was like, okay, yeah, I mean, I like Petrie overall. I think he's a valuable player, so I wasn't, you know, disappointed there bringing him back. But as they say, devil's in the details. And when I saw the details, I was kind of to now, I think I've worked myself into pretty disappointed with the decision made by Nick Caserio. So if you haven't seen it, Petrie, who was a third round rookie, was going into the last year of his contract, and they added 3 years on to the end of his deal worth $39 million. So roughly, you know, right at $13 million per year, which will make him the highest paid player in the league at nickel corner. And I think that's where my pushback lands, Cam, and I'm interested to hear what you think about it. Because, look, again, I value Jalen Petrie. He's a great tackler. He's a thumper. He's a guy that, you know, embodies the swarm mentality that D'Amico wants from his defense. I think he's valuable as a linebacker or a defensive back disguised as a linebacker down by the line of scrimmage and sub package. That is a valuable role. But I'm not paying someone top of the market, literally the highest paid nickel corner in the league, when he's a player who you don't trust in man coverage. I mean, he literally is a nickel corner. I don't know what percentage of his job you would say is covering guys in man coverage. We saw how often he would get beat on crossers across the field when he would be lined up in the slot. The Lions game stands out in particular. A few others where he got torched as well. The Colts got him a few times. The Jets, Davante Adams, torched him a few times. But I'm not paying a guy top of the market value to play nickel corner if he can't cover, if I don't trust him in man coverage. That's the whole reason they moved him from safety. It's like, you know what? Let's get you away from the back end. We don't trust you in coverage. Let's get you closer to the line of scrimmage where you can play the run. And now they're paying literally top of the market for a guy who can't do half his job.
I mean, you hit it right on the head. Yeah, I mean, overall, like his overall grade is really good. I think PFF has him at like 74%. So he's like,
that's overall pretty good. Yeah,
he's like 25th best, like, safety in the league.
I mean, it wouldn't be elite, but I think that would be great as a positive starter. Like, he's a good starter.
He's a good starter.
Right.
But $13 million.
Good starter
a year,
doesn't mean you should be paid top of the league at your position.
No.
That, I think that's where the pushback is.
And it's kind of one of those things. It's like, so Derwin James kind of plays a similar position.
Always bringing it back to the Chargers. You see, you hear this, Johnny?
But
I give him 1 second, and he brings it back to the Chargers.
But I feel like it's a good enough comparison to where
Derwin
James plays basically the same position, but Derwin James is exceptional at all levels of playing that position. And you're talking, he's making like $18, $19 million a year. So the fact that Petrie is making
13.
It's just kind of like, that seems like a lot to give a guy that you basically just talked about, had to switch positions, and now he's just kind of in this weird hybrid position. We like him because he can go after the quarterback, and he's a good run defender, but it's just kind of like all those open missed tackles and stuff and the coverage issues. It's just kind of like, are they doing it because they just want the secondary to stay intact?
I think they're doing it, and we'll get into some more aspects of this as we go on, and we'll carry this conversation over into the next segment. But I think they're doing it, and this is just my gut feel. Like, there's nothing that's come out from reporter. They haven't said this word for word. But it's just my gut feel from who they're paying and who they're paying top of the market. I think they just want to reward, like, their guys.
Yeah.
Like, the guys that embody Swarm, the guys that are the tough nose, fight every down, the guys that basically embody the style and type of play that D'Amico Ryan's played with. And I totally get that, but there also has to be a level of production and talent that comes along with it to make him worthy of extension. And I just, look, Jalen Petrie had a great rookie year. He was a great find by Kasari in the third round out of Baylor. Play dropped off in year two when he was still as a deep safety, and the team realized, and so did us fans watching him play, like, okay, this guy isn't a deep safety. He can't cover. He's getting beat deep. And so, credit to D'Amico, they came up with a way to better utilize his skill set, which is basically treat him as a linebacker.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you talked about rushing the passer and making tackles on running backs. Like, you're describing the attributes of a linebacker. And so they played him like that, and he excelled in that role, but we still saw the Lions game against Amon-Ra, the Jets game against Davante Adams, the Colts got to him a couple times. And look, a lot of people get beat by Davante and Amon-Ra, so that's in itself not something I would crush him over, but he's a guy that gets beat in man coverage quite often.
Yeah.
Like, he's a guy that you would say, if you're grading his overall skill set, man coverage would be on the negative side of that. It would not be one of his strengths. It would be a weakness. And so I just, it's a salary cap league. It's not like baseball where, just if you're the Yankees or the Dodgers, just pay everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all monopoly money. It doesn't matter because there's no salary cap. If you can pay the luxury tax, then you can do whatever you want. It's the football. It's the NFL. It's got a hard cap. You're going to have to pick and choose, okay, which guys are the special guys that we have to make sure, no matter what, we pay them, we keep them, and which guys are, even though we like them, are maybe replaceable. And Jalen Petrie falls on the replaceable side.
He is. And again, I think he's deserving of a contract extension. I just think $13 million a year is just, it's a little much.
Yeah, it's a little rich. And let's carry some more aspects of this conversation on the side, because I think Nick Caserio, in making this move to re-sign Jalen Petrie for, if you missed it, 3 years, $39 million added on to the year he already had on his rookie contract to make him the highest paid nickel corner in the league, is kind of missing his own strength in making this move. I'll tell you what that means on the other side of the break. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
The Paul Gallant Show, weekday afternoons from noon to 3.
Hosting a sports talk radio show is a lot like being a coal miner, except for it takes a little bit more skill and effort. But I'm a blue-collar guy who works very hard for his living. I'm basically the walking embodiment of a Bruce Springsteen song.
You're listening to The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome back into The Bullpen here on a glorious Saturday afternoon in the fair city of Houston, Texas. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, John Belmer here with you. If you want to join in the conversation about the Jalen Petrie contract extension, or what we opened the show with the most heartbreaking moments in Houston sports for, unfortunately, Cam Smith's beloved Cougs. If you want to weigh in on that conversation, give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line. You can find that at 713-780-3776. We have a moment here, Cam, and I'm ashamed that I didn't bring this up. But, well, I think it's in part because there was more than just this moment wrapped in to what happened. But 2019, you know where I'm going?
I think so.
I know where you're going.
2019. Are we in agreement? I think a lot of people in the city are. They didn't win a title in 2019, but that was the best Astros team I've ever seen. I mean, Gerrit Cole at the height of his powers, Justin Verlander, both guys, I believe, struck out 300-plus hitters that season, which is a complete throwback to Nolan Ryan in the 80s. I mean, guys, or Randy Johnson, in the 90s. Guys aren't striking out 300 anymore, and both guys did it. An unbelievable team, but from 2.568, Howie Kendrick hitting the damn foul pole and Pujols obliterating the baseball and Lidge's career as an Astro. So he combines two moments there. I don't know if I would throw now, in the moment, Lidge getting absolutely crushed like a little league pitcher by Pujols was completely deflating. But we know what happened the next game. Yeah. Oswald went in there, shoved, and got himself a bulldozer thanks to Uncle Drayton.
The greatest gift ever.
Yeah. And they gave out a bobblehead of that next year. Oswald sitting on the bulldozer. Still have it.
I do, too. Nice.
Do you really?
Yep. Nice.
That's a great bobblehead. Well done by the Astros on that one. More players sitting on bulldozers, Astros, if you're listening. So I don't know if I would put the Pujols one in there just because it had a happy ending. But, yeah, the Game 7 for Astros Nationals in the 2019 World Series definitely qualifies. So good call from 2.568. I mean, I guess Howie Kendrick is the culmination of what was a terrible night or a terrible finish to the night. But my anger in, like, what if always goes back to Hinch's decision to, one, pull Zach Greinke, who was dominant and, like, gave up a single, and all of a sudden you just yank him. And then, okay, if you do pull him, we'll go to Garrett Cole, who was ready.
But it was Will Harris, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was Will Harris. So I don't know if you guys agree, but my kind of, like, hand-wringing, like, oh, my God, what are they doing, wasn't even really Howie Kendrick. The game was lost before that to me. It was the decision with Greinke and Cole.
That might be the most, like, gut-punching.
I think it might be for me, too.
Although, I know in 2015 when I was working with the Astros, I literally witnessed that collapse against...
After the governor tweeted out, congratulations, Astros, after, for making the ALCS.
After all those years in a row of 100 losses. 4-1
lead with, what, 6 outs to go?
Yeah, and then that ground ball through Correa's...
It was Will Harris, too.
I think it was. But in Will Harris's defense, and it wasn't the cleanest ground ball, but it was one that Correa should have made. But I was literally, like, witnessing this entire collapse live. Ugh. So, like, that one, I know for a lot of people, that one probably doesn't hit him as hard. But because I was there in person, it just, like, I still have nightmares from that one.
I get that. Because especially, I get why people wouldn't be as affected by it, because it was the Astros' first trip into the playoffs in literally a decade. I mean, 2015, last time they made it, before that was 2005.
Five, yeah.
And you knew that team with a young Correa, with Bregman wasn't even up yet. Tucker wasn't even – he wasn't even – actually, he had been drafted, but he wasn't up yet. Like, you knew that team was still probably a few years away. So,
oh, yeah.
So I get why people wouldn't list that as high up as some of the other ones, but if I could play the other side of that, they should have beat – we all agree they should have beat the Royals. You're up.
Yes.
You're up 2-1. You have a 4-run lead with 6 outs to go. You should have won that game. The Royals went on to win the damn World Series. Like,
yep.
You should have beat the World yep. Series champions. It's hard not to feel like they could have won the whole thing. Like, I mean, they probably don't, but it's still, there's a part of me that thinks, man, they could have been the World Series champions of 15, because they should have beat the team that did win it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
How crazy would that have been? I mean, 2015 and then 2017 and then 2019. Like, it's almost like the Giants when they would win it every other year.
Yeah, like when it was even years. And yeah,
it was
8, 10 and 12, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
Or 10, 12, 14. One of those two. But yeah, the Giants had a crazy run too. All right. So, if you have any other moments you want to share with us, worst moments in Houston sports off the heels of the Cougars' unfortunate late collapse against Florida, give us a call or a text in the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We'll take those throughout the show. But getting back to Jalen Petrie, I think we left off the last bit or the last segment with the part of the conversation of, like, it just feels that even though Jalen Petrie is a valuable part of the team, he has a role, he's a good thumper, he plays the run well. Like, it feels overpaid because, and I know this is coming off, might come off as dismissive or over explaining the side of it, but, like, he can't cover. Like, I know he can cover a little bit, but you just see him get beaten on crossers and man coverage from the slot far too much for me to feel comfortable paying top of the position money. The other part of it, and getting, it kind of goes back to the, well, you got to look at your roster construction and the salary cap league and decide who's replaceable and who's not. And part of why I feel Jalen Petrie is replaceable is not only because you know, his play and his production from a man coverage standpoint is lacking, but we've also seen Nick Asterio hit on how many defensive backs over the last few years. Derek Stingley nailed it, right? I mean, Jalen Petrie obviously nailed it. Kamari Lassiter nailed it. Kalen Bullock nailed it. I mean, and obviously Stingley was the third overall pick, but Kamari Lassiter was a second round pick, and then Petrie and Bullock were both third round picks. So, look, I mean, part of this for me is not only does Jalen Petrie not really, like, his production not live up to what I would want from a guy I'm going to pay that sort of money, but why would you pay top of the market money for a position that you've shown, in Nick Caserio, obviously, I'm talking about, that you've shown clearly being capable of finding hits at multiple times over?
Yeah, and it's
arguably his biggest strength is drafting defensive backs.
Yeah, and we see, like, contract extensions, and they're obviously, like, we talked about how, like, this player will set the precedent and, like, the market for it. So it's just weird because it's just, like, we come back to it, and it's just, like, Petrie doesn't have, like, a real set position. So it's almost like Caserio set the market on somebody that doesn't have, like a full, like, identity, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I feel like you could have gone lower, because it, like, obviously if you're an elite cornerback, and you are an elite cornerback, you're going to get paid a good amount of money. Safeties and, you know, and free safeties, strong safeties are going to get paid, like, a little less. But then again, with Petrie, it's just kind of like he's not a linebacker, he's not a safety, he's not a cornerback. So it's just like, I feel like you could have set the market at this, like, hybrid position that he is and done it lower.
Yeah, and I don't know if Petrie would have necessarily taken that, but, you know, like, I don't care. Like, if I'm kind of at the point, like, he had a year left on his contract, so he didn't have to do it. I get the standpoint for when people say you want to be able to jump ahead of the market, jump ahead of hitting unrestricted free agency, because, like we saw with the Nico Collins deal, like, maybe you can get a deal now that once he does it again, puts another year of tape on, and the market goes up and up and up with the salary cap going up, new deals getting made, then maybe that deal that you did a year early looks like a great value. But I don't want to necessarily do that with Petrie. Like, yeah. Right. Like, because to me, you know, Nico Collins, Derek Stingley, eventually Stroud, Will Anderson, those guys are in the non-replaceable category to me. If Petrie is in the replaceable category, which I think most of us can agree with, then, okay, you play out this year. You let him hit the market. If the market says he's worth a deal that's more reasonable, less than what he got, then you resign him. If not, you let him go, and you draft a guy in the second and third round where you've had hit after hit after hit. Because Nick Caserio, I mean, other than – I don't know what you would call his biggest strength as a GM, but it certainly to me would either be drafting wide receivers or drafting defensive backs. So, unless they're absolutely special at that position – It's not like offensive line where he's had a ton of misses. Like, defensive back and wide receiver,
he's been on point.
Yeah, like, if they're not special, then why are we spending top of the market value on this? Johnny, you have any thoughts on this Jalen Petrie deal? Weigh in on this, please.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little high, obviously, right? He set the market with him, but I think the what was happening here is the Texans are valuing what he does do really well, and you mentioned that he's not great at covering, but, like, the defense has a lot of pieces. I don't think there's a lot of holes in this defense. I think they're expecting Jalen Petrie to be really good at what he does well, stopping the run, flying around. And I think maybe D'Amico and him have a good relationship, and they sort of value what he does. And it was just worth it to make sure that he's, you know, here in this. I don't know if you had to pay him this much, but obviously they believe in what he does do well.
Yeah, and as you're talking, I was kind of thinking that, because we talked about the Caserio side of this, right? Like, we felt he's been capable of finding these guys in the second and third rounds, where if you let Petrie walk, you feel comfortable that you have a general manager that could find the next Jalen Petrie, right? But the other element to this, and John mentioned his name, D'Amico Ryans, is when I have a defensive-minded head coach who's proven to get the best out of guys, whether it was San Francisco with Fred Warner and the safety Tuafanga, who ended up going to Denver. Rather be here, like, I mean, Henry Toa didn't have a great first year, took a big step forward this year. We've seen him get the most out of these one-year veteran free agent defensive linemen, whether it be, you know, Sheldon Rankins or Mario Edwards or Derek Barnett or Jerry Hughes towards the end of his career. Like, we feel like D'Amico, as the great defensive mind, could take pieces that maybe aren't as valued on the open market by the entire league and get the best possible result out of those guys. So that's the other part. And not only do I feel confident that Caserio could go out in the second or third round and find the next Jalen Petrie, because he's done it at least three times over, I also feel capable of whoever Caserio goes out and drafts, that D'Amico has a track record of getting the best out of that player as well. So it just feels like the Texans paid a price for special when Jalen Petrie, and this is no offense, just, you know, I'm not in love with his coverability, isn't special. That's kind of, that's, if I can boil it down to the simplest terms possible, I think that's kind of where I'm at.
I'm with you on that. I don't know. To bring it back to like what you were saying, like, you know, obviously if he hits a free agency market, you're risking his, like, the amount you'd have to pay him to be higher than what you gave him now. So, I mean, I guess you could look at it.
Just let him walk. That's where I'm at.
Or just let him walk.
Yeah.
I feel like even if you did that, I feel like he wouldn't even walk. I mean, he played at Baylor. Like, he's been with the Texans for 3 years now. But, I mean, I guess that's a risk they didn't want to take. So I guess they were obviously okay with, in our eyes, overpaying him. But, I mean, maybe his pass coverage will improve. And
I mean,
this contract will...
Fourth year's a charm?
Yeah.
If he could cover in year two, he could cover in year three. But, Hey, why not? Did you guys ever watch Arrested Development? I know that's going back. That's a show from... 20 years ago.
I've seen a few episodes.
There's a bit where the character played by David Cross, I forget the character, Tobias, I think is his name in the show. Anyway, he's talking with his wife, and they're about to get a divorce, or talking through the end of their marriage, and he comes up with, they joke about some scheme of things people try towards the end of their relationship, and he makes the remark, that never works. That never works for anybody. It's never worked before. And he pauses, and he turns and goes, but it could work for us. And that's kind of what I feel like that, like, I'm not singling you out here at all, but just the thought process of, like, maybe Petrie in year four is suddenly going to be able to cover. I'm like, I mean, how many times does he have to quack before you know, you're okay with calling him a duck? I mean, I think he is who he is at this point from a coverage standpoint.
And like, this could be a little bit of a stretch, but I'm thinking of a guy that D'Amico played with in Glover Quinn.
Glover Quinn, yeah. He was here for like 3-4 years, and then he moved to Detroit.
Yeah. And
Texans didn't pay him because, you remember why? They decided to pay Ed Reed instead.
Yes.
Oops.
That's another player, too, where both those guys, obviously Ed Reed was a safety, Glover was a safety, but they were both more in the box heavy hitters. So maybe that's just something D'Amico wants one person on that team to be that hybrid.
I think,
when Ed Reed came over, he was not the same Ed Reed.
He was a shell
when he was in Baltimore, but he played like a similar style that Petrie did, kind of like DJ Swearinger. You know, DJ, even though DJ was a little
DJ Swag was the guy that had his dog bite Clowney. We can't look for the DJ Swearinger attributes in our players. We don't want Jalen Petrie's dog biting Will Anderson Jr.
We don't. No, I don't need another DJ Swearinger character.
We don't need DJ Swag back
but
in our life.
It seems like D'Amico kind of likes having one of these guys that can play that hybrid safety like linebacker, and, you know, maybe Petrie's his boy.
Yeah, one more quick thing before we go to break. I think it's just something to keep, not necessarily a cause for panic or concern, or maybe not even a red flag, just something to kind of keep an eye on. I heard this quote on another station when Nick Caserio joined the show. This was actually a few weeks ago, but the host, I'll just say the name. I don't care. I don't buy into the whole radio thing where you can't say other people's names. He joined Payne and Pendergast on 610. This was like April 3rd, April 4th, something around there. And they asked him about the process or the thought of possibly doing a deal for Jalen Petrie, which they obviously did a little over a week later. But the quote, part of his quote really caught my ear in this answer he gave about re-signing Petrie. Quote, always open-minded to having a dialogue with a player and their representatives and trying to figure out an agreement that everybody feels comfortable with, because the goal is for both entities and both parties to be happy with how it went. You don't want to have, we're not trying to, quote, win the negotiation. We don't believe in that. It's not how we operate. You want something where the organization wins and the player feels valued and they feel like you made them a priority. And I get that he obviously has to keep players happy. He has to make sure the locker room's, you know, not disgruntled. I get all of that. And there's no reason to, kind of like you see when arbitration comes around in baseball, there's no reason to nickel a dime a player over a million or two if you know you want to get the deal done. So on that aspect of it, I agree with what he said about let's find a deal that makes them feel happy. But when you're seeing this, not just with Petrie, but you know with other players along the roster where it feels like the Texans are, I mean, they did it with Stingley. Now, Stingley's special. I didn't mind it. But they're having a trend now of seemingly jumping the gun and being willing to set a top of the market price. And they haven't paid Will Anderson yet. They haven't paid CJ Stroud yet. CJ is probably getting $60 million per year. That's what that got. That's what that got. I mean, I've heard people say, well, maybe he'll do you Mahomes. Maybe he'll do you Brady. Maybe he'll take a team-friendly deal. Okay, team-friendly is still probably $58
million. It's still a ton of money.
It's still going to be a bleep ton of money. They're going to have to back up the Brinks truck for him. So it's just something to keep an eye on as we look at the roster construction and start to wonder, like, do they have money for things? Okay, well, part of the answer to that, well, are they continuing to give out top-of-the-market value contracts basically on everyone that they like? It's, I don't know. To me, part of being GM is making the hard decision. And to me, giving Petrie this much money was kind of passing on making the hard decision.
Yeah, but, and like obviously you want to keep like the team happy, the player happy. You want to keep that unity. But like keeping players happy doesn't always lead to success.
Well,
like,
I mean, part of keeping players happy is winning. And if you can't afford to build the team in the way you want to because you're paying everybody top dollar, then that's not going to keep the team happy.
At the end of the day, not everybody's going to be happy all the time.
You're going to have to cut some players because you're over the cap. So anyway, something to keep an eye on as the offseason in the next few years go on. All right, we'll maybe get into some NFL topics if we have time. But let's go ahead and transition over to the Astros on the other side of the break because they had a breakout game, gentlemen. 14 runs.
Finally.
How many games prior to that did it take them to get to 14 runs? It's probably almost the entire damn season at this point. But anyway, we'll talk about the Astros' big win on the other side of the break. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
Houston's only FM sports stations. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Ball hit high in the air, deep to left field. Could it be his first career home run? It is! Cam Smith! His first home run of the show, and the Astros lead 13-3.
Welcome to the show, Cam Smith.
As he drills one to left, does he have his first Astros home run?
Yes!
Yes, he does! Isak Paredes!
This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. That voice of Todd Halas you just heard calling the action for three Astros home runs as a part of the 14-3 blitzing they gave the Angels last night. Yiner Diaz, Isak Paredes, and Cam Smith getting on the board last night, too.
Welcome to the show, Cam Smith.
There we go, Johnny. Welcome to the show, Cam Smith.
Thank you.
So that was obviously courtesy of Space City Home Run Network and Todd Halas. You can hear every Friday with the Killer Bees, either 4 o'clock if they're on the road or 4:30 if they're at home, if you want to hear the voice of the Astros. Always very open with us, too. I mean, I'm not just saying that because I'm on the show, but sometimes you get these play-by-play guys on, and, you know, they only want to give you so much, right? Yeah. They don't really want to give a real truthful answer. TK will answer.
TK's for
you
the
ask
people.
The question, TK will answer. So definitely check those visits out with the Killer Bees every Friday at either 4 or 4:30. So, again, Astros win 14-3 last night over the Angels, which was definitely a welcome sight from a team who's had an offense that struggled and had an off day the day before, but the last time they played lost in just absolutely dramatic fashion. And we might talk about that game here in a minute. But let's first get into the good with what happened last night. So again, Isak Paredes, 3 hits, 2 walks, including his first home run as a Houston Astro. Christian Walker, who got banged up a little bit on a bizarre play. I don't know if you got to see the game, but I forget the Angels player. Do you remember the name of the Angels player that hit him?
No, but he got kneed in the butt.
Yeah, so there was a ground ball, and obviously Walker's covering first base. And as the Angels player came through, he was way too far on the inside of the base path, like basically almost into the grass. And Christian Walker was where he was supposed to be. Like, he wasn't leaning out over the base. He was stretching out to catch the ball, being thrown to him. And the Angels player just, like, completely had, like, a running, like a WWE Daniel Bryan running knee right into his ass. Ugh. It was – Walker went down. I think from what I've heard, he's fine. But, yeah, that was a brutal hit Walker took there.
Before he even started the season, he was dealing with
– Yeah, he had the oblique thing, yeah. And then in addition to Isak and Christian Walker, someone who I was really high on to go into the season and had just started off as doo-doo garbage, Yainer Diaz, 3 hits last night, the grand slam, which you heard, also had a double and a single, just a triple short of the cycle. So, I mean, the bats have been historically quiet, Cam. I don't know if you saw this stat from Chandler Rome, but after 12 games, so every game except for yesterday, after 12 games, the Astros were slashing .208, .293, .291 as a team. The .291 slugging and .584 OPS were both the lowest in all of baseball. Not just the American League, but all of baseball. Was last night in 14 runs by the Astros enough for you to go, all right, maybe that was just the early season. These guys are about to turn a corner.
No, not really.
Okay, all because, right. Well, there we have it. Next on the bullpen, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
It's not even just those numbers that are concerning. It's also the fact that they, and I haven't checked since last night, but before last night, I think they were dead last in home runs. They were one of the worst teams when it came to doubles. Mm-hmm. One of the
I would believe all of it.
One of
they
the highest striking out team, which is crazy because you don't think of the Astros as being a high strikeout team. Like the last time I think of them as being a high strikeout team was when Chris Carter was on the team,
and
it was the 100 loss season.
Yeah, what, 11 or 12 or something like that?
I mean, it was great to see that, because before that, 37 runs in 12 games. Like,
Wait, so they scored 37 runs in 12 games and 14 last night.
Yeah.
I don't want to do the math on that, but that's like a high percentage of their runs. So that would be, 51 runs for the entire season?
Yeah.
And 14 of which
came in one game.
So what is that, like, one-fourth? 25% of their total season runs came in one game?
Basically. Crazy. And it's just...
Don't love that.
And I forgot which show I was listening to, but they were talking about kind of like the concerns with Pena, because they're like, oh, he had such a great spring training, now he's struggling. Like, okay, Pena sometimes starts off slow, like... It is what it is. And then, there's a whole Christian Walker, like, when's he going to turn it around? Well, at least Christian Walker for a few games was actually connecting and hitting the ball hard.
A massive home run against the Twins.
Yeah, it just wasn't dropping. And then there was the topic of Yainer Diaz, and it was just kind of like, we haven't seen anything from Yainer to think that he's going to...
Let's carry, because that plays into a question I want to ask you, but we don't really have enough time in this segment to do this. So let's carry that part of the conversation over on the other side of the break. I'm going to ask Cam, and maybe he just gave us his answer, but what's been most disappointing to you about the Astros so far? That on the other side of the break, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Devastating loss for the Astros, up 5-0 with only 4 outs remaining to get.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome back into the Bullpen. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, John Domer here with you. That, again, courtesy of Space City Home Network and the voice of Todd Callis calling what was definitely the ugliest, worst loss of the Astros season thus far. The game on Wednesday at Seattle where they led 5-0 in the eighth inning and just completely pooped all over the field. Ended up giving up a grand slam and a walk-off walk to Randy Arozarena. With
literally the worst way you can lose a game.
Oh, I mean, a walk-off walk? Yeah. I think I'm with you. I think that is the worst way to lose. Cause you can hear it in Todd's voice. Todd is a pro. But he couldn't hide his disgust in that moment. He's like, "And that'll do it. Ball game over." Like, come on, man.
They tell you as a pitcher, if the bases are loaded,
you gotta make him hit it.
The worst thing you can do is walk them in. Let your defense play behind you. Like, if they get a hit, they get a hit. But to basically give them a free
run. Especially since it was a slider.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, even if he hadn't. I'm not a pitcher. I don't know the term as far as how he gripped it or if he over-released it or whatever. But even if he threw it correctly, there's a decent chance it's out of the zone. Like, I don't know. I get the mindset that Arozarena probably with a full count is hunting fastball. But, again, I'm with you. Maybe it's a line drive right at somebody. Maybe it's a long fly ball that goes to the wall but, you know, is caught short of going out. Like, I would rather take my chances with that than spinning up a slider out of the zone and walking in the run. So, anyway, this has been outside of last night, really a season of disappointment so far for the Houston Astros. And you were talking about, was it Yonder Diaz you were talking about before we went to break? So, I mean, I think that's probably my answer to this. I'm curious if that's also your answer and what Johnny's answer is to this as well. Astros right now, what are they, one game below 500? It's been a disappointing.
Six
and seven. But what's been the most disappointing part of this Astros season for you so far, Cam?
So specifically, if I'm going after one player, it's going to be Yiner. But as a whole, and I knew that they might struggle a little bit because we've seen that the Astros notoriously start slow in the past. The only issue is that's been with teams where they've had a lot of chemistry. You know, the days of George Springer, Alex Bregman, Carlos Correa, like you knew that they were going to like dog down together and get out of the slump. But this is a whole new like Astros team. Like it's a whole new lineup. Like they've a lot of these guys have never played before. So I thought that there'd be a little bit of some struggle offensively. I just didn't think it was going to be this bad. And from the bigger names that you thought. And the funny thing was, is I know we talked about how like, oh, if we'll allow Altuve's defense in left field to stink or be below average as long as he's driving in runs and getting hits, which he's doing, but he's the only one doing it.
Yeah, I mean, right? You look at Altuve's slash line right now. He's hitting .339, .383 on base, .500 slugging, .883 OPS. I mean, he's having. Yeah. I mean. Not a career year, but if you were to stack this season against other seasons in his prime, you wouldn't notice any difference as far as that slash line. That looks like a in-prime classic Jose Altuve line. I agree with you on Yonder Diaz. I mean, there's certainly other people to point out as far as being a disappointment, but Yonder Diaz right now hitting .132. .132, otherwise known as about 50 points lower than what we were mad about Maldi hitting.
Yeah.
So he's hitting .132 with an OPS of .432, which I'd be disappointed with if that was just his slugging, but that's his slugging and on base. So I'm in agreement with Yonder Diaz, but Johnny, where do you side on this? What's been your biggest disappointment?
Well, I don't want to just jump on that same train with you guys, but it is. I mean, it is. Diaz. I think that's the answer. But if I have to, you know, pick somebody else here, it's going to be, you know, somebody at the back end of that bullpen here, or maybe Ronel Blanco hasn't looked, you know, like he...
He's a little better last night.
Yeah. he's definitely hasn't looked the same as he had, you know, has in the past. I don't know, Yordan?
Yeah.
Yordan's been disappointing.
Yordan's just... I struggle with that just because...
Because you know he'll get it together.
Right. We didn't get to this question yesterday on the Bees, but it was on the rundown. Like, when do you hit the panic alarm on certain guys? This is one of Joel's topics. And the first guy on his list was Yordan. And we didn't get to it, but my answer was going to be like next year. Like, I mean, like, unless he shows this is like something that happens all season long, like Jordan has such a long track record of being amazing when he's not hurt that I'm just never going to believe he's not just about to turn the corner. So I'm not really worried about Jordan at all. I'm really not worried about Christian Walker at all because he also has a long track record of being an elite player. Now, we'll leave out for a small chance, because he is 34, that this could be him hitting the downside of his physical prime.
Like Abreu?
See, you had to go and mention the devil's name. Like, why would you put that evil on us, Cam?
I'm sorry, and I'm not saying it because I really liked the Christian Walker signing.
He wouldn't put that. He put the Jose Abreu evil on us, Johnny.
I mean,
yeah, he did. Oh, I think people liked the Abreu signing then.
I know.
Too.
I know there are some similarities. Damn it. I mean, Abreu was, I think, 2 years older at the time. He was 36, not 34. But I mean, it's. No, you know what? No, it's not possible. He's not Jose Abreu. Shut up, Cam. All right, so Ronel Blanco. That got really aggressive, Johnny. That got really aggressive. Let's get back to Ronel Blanco so we stop talking about Christian Walker. Like last night, you know, not bad overall. 5 innings, 2 earned runs, 7 Ks. I mean, obviously you would take that every day of the week. But his other 2 outings, you know, not great, and especially the one against Minnesota. Only got through an inning and 2/3. 4 earned runs, 5 hits in, like I said, less than 2 innings. So, Ronel Blanco was someone, we never got to this on this show, but it was something I wanted to talk about because there was a CBS Sports article that listed, like, their breakout players from 2024 who they thought were, like, the most real who could repeat it in 2025. And the top guy on their list was Ronel Blanco.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And I mean, I could see what they were talking about in the article, but this was a dude that didn't make the team as, like, a regular player for the first time until he was 30. We talked about JP France being like an old, never was prospect when he debuted at 28. And Ronel Blanco was 2 years older at age 30. Hell, he's older than Sean Mapes, who's sometimes on the show with us now. So, like, I guess I was optimistic still that Ronel Blanco, because even though he had a second half drop off last year, his second half drop off was still a guy in the mid threes as far as ERA. Like, I knew the first half where he was, like, 2.5 ERA, that was not going to be, you know, repeatable. There was no world in which that was repeatable. But second half, even with the drop-off, he was, like, 3.5. It was like, okay, maybe he regresses a little bit further. Maybe now he's a 3.8 ERA guy. And I would still take that from my fifth starter. Well, I guess he's technically your fourth starter. Well, actually, now he's your third starter because Eric Geddy got – oh, my God. Do we have to talk – we might have to talk about Eric Geddy, too. How in the world do you break your thumb – while the other team is hitting bad.
At least it's not as bad as what we thought.
Have you guys seen Dumb and Dumber?
Oh, yeah.
Johnny, I know you're younger than us. Have you seen Dumb and Dumber, the classic with Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels? This feels like the moment where they go into their apartment and they find their parrot dead, and Jim Carrey proclaims, and all our pets' heads are falling off. Like, when Spencer Arrighetti breaks his thumb while out in the outfield during batting practice, this is kind of our pets' heads are falling off moment for the 2025 Astros. But, yeah, so Ronel Blanco, I mean, getting all the way back to that, I know we diverged over to Jim Carrey there for a second. But I don't know. Like, let me put it to you like this. If he were to finish the season, you know, healthy all the way through, and his ERA is 4-1, would you be satisfied with that? As your, well, right now, third starter, but when you're fully healthy, like fourth or fifth starter?
If he was my fourth or fifth starter, I don't think I'd be too upset by that. But it also, mostly too, because before 2024, he wasn't a starter.
Yeah, that, like, was something apparently Dana Brown just, like, got a look at him. It's like, man, that guy looks like a starter to me, and made the change, and it worked out. Obviously, last year, he was great for them.
I mean, we kind of saw that with Brad Peacock. Brad Peacock wasn't really.
I love Brad Peacock.
I love Peacock, but it was almost kind of the same thing. Like, he was a reliever. They tried him at starter, put him back at reliever. Then he had a really good year starting. It's just kind of like Ronel. He was never a starter before 2024. So that's why I think he has a little more leeway. But I also was very shook when I saw that he was on the top of the list, because I was just kind of like, that's the number one guy you think has the chance of repeating? Like,
yeah,
he's done it, he did it for 1 year, and that's what you think?
At age 30. Yeah. At age 30. So they were definitely buying the hype. I think Yadier Diaz and the offense are going to carry most of mine. Renel Blanco's a good answer there by Johnny as well. I think for the most part, except with the exception of really one guy, I wouldn't put the bullpen arms on this list just because, you know, bullpen this early in the season, now 13 games in, one bad game can blow up your ERA to just crazy levels. Like Brian Abreu, who overall before yesterday had been pretty good. Like that was... Those were the only I was just double checking this to make sure I was right. Those three runs he gave up against Seattle were the only earned runs he's given up the entire season. But now his ERA is 5.06.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, like, I don't want to crush a bullpen guy right now because the numbers can be so inflated because of the small sample size. The one exception to that, and it's kind of similar to
I know where you're going.
Renel. Okay, well, say the name for me.
Contreras.
No, actually, it wasn't going to be that name. I mean, Contreras probably can make the list as well. He was batting in Seattle. No, the name I was going to say, because that, to me, is kind of a similar thing to Renel Blanco, where he kind of came out of nowhere, was Taylor Scott.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Taylor Scott was unbelievable for them last year as like a sixth inning, kind of the first guy to come out and put out fires before you got to your 7, 8, 9 guys. He was unbelievable last year. This year, ERA is 8.31. Again, extremely small sample size. Double check here on the amount of innings he's thrown. Can't be that much. It looks like he's got
4.1.
So again, tiny sample size. So you don't want to overreact to it. But Taylor Scott was already someone that I kind of was, you know, keeping a side eye on, a little suspicious of, just because last year felt like it might have been the outlier in what has been an overall kind of a journeyman career. But I think Taylor Scott, if we had to single out a bullpen guy that I was a little suspicious of or disappointed in, because, I mean, with Ryan Preston leaving, you were really relying on him as being kind of your seventh inning guy.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, I don't know if he is.
It's almost the exact same situation we saw with Montero. Montero, really good.
Which, thankfully, he gone.
Yeah, really good 2 years ago, but that was the outlining season. Then they gave him a big contract, and he went back to the Montero that we had seen the years before.
Yeah.
And obviously, I haven't seen a whole lot of Taylor Scott, but the fact that you've already been in 6 games and 4 innings and you're giving up basically a run every outing. Like,
yeah, 8.31 ERA. Because
like you said, like Brian Abreu, no runs
until
he gave
Wednesday.
Up a lot. But yeah. Scott is consistently giving up runs, and that's where it's like more of a concern. Like it's almost like Hader last year. He 10 phenomenal games in a row, and then he'll give up a game where he gives up like 2 or 3 runs, so the ERA like blows up for a little bit. So I can deal with that. But when you're consistently giving up a run every single outing, that's where it's just kind of like, okay, we got to stop using this dude.
Yeah, I mean, they unfortunately don't have the luxury of really like pulling
right
the
now.
Plug on anybody because they're obviously down arms because our pitchers' heads are falling off in the case of Spencer Arrigetti. But certainly something to keep an eye on with Taylor Scott, because I'm a little suspicious that last year might have been an outlier. But well, let's end the Rockets or the Astros conversation, because we have to get to the Rockets on the other side of the break, who, beyond all of our expectations, will be the number 2 seed in the playoffs when they start next week. So we'll get into the Rockets on the other side of the break, and maybe a little bit of fun with some audio that came out of the Masters this week as well. That, when the bullpen returns for hour 2 on the other side of the break, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.